Hello and welcome to the Nuts and Bolts of Making Money with Teleclasses and Workshops. I'm Dr. Jackie Black and I'm your facilitator for this second part of our two-part series. Today we're going to focus on the basic short presentation and the basic one-day workshop. We'll start with the basic short presentation. And I want to talk about designing the compelling short presentation, building rapport with your audience, audience-centered speaking, which is very different from the teleclass that we talked about last week, crafting your speech, your speaker's checklist. I want to talk about the fear of public speaking, too, because many, many people, as you can imagine, are afraid of public speaking. What can you talk about? That's always a question for speakers and presenters. What can I talk about? So I want to spend a little bit of time talking about that. There's the intro, bio, extra, and marketing materials and resources. When you design your compelling short presentation, you want to make sure that you understand what your short presentation provides to your audience or for your audience. It's an opportunity for them to connect with you, to enjoy themselves for a few minutes, to learn about something new or something they don't know too much about, or to be entertained, to become motivated. Your short presentation is the opportunity for you to build rapport with your audience, to let them become acquainted with you, and to begin to build goodwill with them. Here's what your short presentation is not. It is not dialogue-based learning. It's not lecture-based. It's not learning outcome-based. It's not a powerful learning environment. It's not a highly interactive learning environment. It's not an opportunity to surface the problem or the solution. And it is not the opportunity to birth the wisdom of the group. So you say to yourself, well, what's left? Short presentations and speeches are based on what we know as the audience-centered approach. And that depends on how the audience actually hears you and interprets your message. So a compelling short presentation will inform. It will transform, entertain, motivate, persuade, and inspire. I should probably say or inspire, because you won't do all of those things in the 30 or 40-minute presentation. So remember, again, inform, transform, entertain, motivate, persuade, and inspire. You want to build rapport with your audience because it allows people to become comfortable with you, and it sends the message that each attendee is important to you. Building rapport builds loyalty in the relationship. It gives you and attendees an opportunity to meet when they arrive and they interact with you. It entrusts you with positional power. You're the expert. They see you as the expert, the speaker. And you want to feel like you're speaking to new friends who like you and want you to succeed. So as you build rapport with people, you'll feel that way more and more. And it presents you with the opportunity to share personal stories. When we talk about audience-centered speaking, there are four basic speaker guidelines. Number one, understand the purpose of the presentation. Number two, keep your message clear and concise. Number three, be prepared. Don't wing it or fly by the seat of your pants or think that you've given this presentation so many times that you don't have to practice and you don't have to be prepared. And number four, be enthusiastic and excited when you're delivering your message. The short presentation format demands that you stick to your prepared remarks. Now, you know, last week we talked about the teleclass, that you really have a lot of flexibility to go with the flow, to go with the energy. That is not true with your short presentation. Stick to your prepared remarks. Craft your talk well, practice it well, and deliver it well. Practice, practice, practice. You can have it videoed. You can, at a minimum, practice in your phone so that you can record in your phone and listen to how you sound and do your timing, because it has to be well timed. Treat all your talks as important as all the other talks. And be diligent in your preparation. All your talks deserve your diligent preparation. If they don't, then don't deliver them. Right? Deliver another talk. You want to make sure that you're connecting with your audience, that you're upbeat and positive, that you're engaging with your audience rather than teaching them or talking at them. You want to realize that you don't have the time to warm up your audience. Okay, when you come out, you have less than a minute to say what you're going to say so that they engage with you. They like you. They want to hear what you have to say. When you choose a great topic, you want to design a memorable title. Titles are so important. That's the very first place that anybody will connect with you and with your presentation, is when they read the title someplace and they decide, oh, I want to listen to that. I want to know more about that. So stick to the topics that you deeply care about. Speak about the topics that you live. Don't just brush up on the topic and think you have enough depth and then deliver it. It will fall flat. You have to tap into your passion and then let your passion out. Speakers don't just love to speak, they love to make a difference. So make your topic very narrow. Include two or three main points only. And know how you want the audience to change as a result of your time on the platform. What do you want them to get? What is their takeaway? What should they know or have, or how do you want them to be different? Make different choices. Think differently. And when you know that, then you will probably hit the mark with your presentation. Determine the purpose of your presentation. Are you persuading people? Is there a question on the table and you're bringing facts or values or speaking about policy? Are you strengthening or changing attitudes or beliefs or values? Are you talking to people to stimulate action or to simply inform? Find out exactly what the organizers expect from you, the people who invite you to talk. Why do they want you there? Why did they select you? What do they want you to talk about? Then you develop the central ideas, generate two or three key points only, and three is normally too much depending on how long your presentation is. Presentations, and we're not talking about keynotes, presentations are generally 30 to 60 minutes. And when they say, and will you take questions, and they want you to do a Q&A, that's included. So it's not 30 minutes plus question and answer. If they're going to give you 30 minutes, they're giving you 30 minutes to talk, including questions and answers. So generate your two key points and gather your supporting materials, illustrations, descriptions, analogies, explaining certain things, giving your opinion, giving statistics, telling anecdotal stories. All of those pieces will bring your point alive, will help people hear your point of view and get the meaning of the words that you're speaking. There are three simple elements to include in every short presentation that will keep your participants on the edge of their seats, and you're going to remember these from last week. Number one, anecdotal stories. Lots of personal stories that bring your point alive. Number two, statistics to validate your teaching points. And number three, quotes that are compelling, or quotes from famous people that you use to strengthen your teaching points. Now, you're a subject matter expert. You're a famous person. Maybe there's something that you say over and over and over to people, or that you're known for saying. So use your own quotes, too. It doesn't have to be only other people's quotes. Be really clear about what you want to say. Identify and understand the message that you want to deliver. And then determine how to deliver your message in an accurate, understandable manner. Develop a sense of timing, and that comes from practice, practice, practice. Your message must be timely and relevant to current issues as well. So know who you want to tell and what you want them to tell. Understand their interests, their presuppositions, their values, their problems, and their challenges, and recognize why it is that they might be interested in listening to you. As a speaker, you want to understand that your message is the most powerful when you can deliver good material in a short amount of time. So you want to be sure to keep your stories to less than 2 minutes and script them out and then condense them. I had a mentor years ago tell me that create whatever it is you're creating and then drop out half the material, whether it's a teleclass or a workshop or a short presentation or a keynote. Write it all down and then take half of it away. When you're making a short presentation, more is less. Less is more. Less is more. So, again, script out your story and then condense it. The story must answer the questions who, what, where, when, and why. Right? You probably remember that from high school journalism. Don't write anything that doesn't answer the questions who, what, where, why, who, what, when, where, why. The story must have a sense of direction in it. Each part of the story must move toward the conclusion, and the audience must believe that the story is going somewhere. So don't tell a story for the purpose of telling a story. Make sure that your story connects to something that you're speaking to or speaking about. And less is better. Leave out cliches and filler words, hackneyed words. Leave out phrases such as, I love this one, let me be honest, or let me be blunt, or let me be frank. Avoid, in other words, to say it another way. Just say it the other way if saying it another way is better. If you don't think you're being clear, don't say it the way that's unclear. Be sure that you speak in short sentences, short phrases, and short words. This is not because the people you're speaking to aren't bright and articulate. It's because when people are listening, listening language is different than reading language. Listening language, when people are listening to you. And they're not following along and they don't have any notes. And so there's always this little bit of a delay. The other thing that happens is people might get very excited about something that you're saying, and they'll linger for a moment to really think about what it is you're saying. And then they may miss the next couple of things you say. And the research has shown that if you speak in short sentences, short phrases, and short words, that people can linger for a moment, and then they can very quickly pick up what you're saying because you're not, they haven't missed a lot of complicated content. One of the worst mistakes you can ever make as a speaker is talking too long. Even if your speech was brilliant, even if people came away with more information that will change their lives forever than they imagined, they're going to be mad. And they might say, that speaker didn't know when enough was enough. That speaker didn't know when to stop. Well, why do you think? Because people get overloaded and they don't like how it feels to be overloaded or overwhelmed or to be sort of tired by all the data. You know, that data exhaustion when data is dumped. Oh, it's a little bit like a hangover. So let me stop here and see if we have any questions before I go on to crafting your speech.
Jackie, this is Libby.
So, yes, Libby, thank you.
Okay, I have a question. Should you, especially if you're doing this on the phone, should you script it word for word?
Yes. Yes, but don't read it. Yeah, but I want to say it's highly unlikely that you will be invited to present for to make a short presentation on the phone. Short presentations are generally in person. They're breakfast meetings or lunch meetings or dinner meetings. They're service organizations or charity organizations or women's groups or men's groups or professional organizations. Those are the kinds of places that you typically will give a short presentation. If you are invited to speak on a teleclass, on a telebridge, we'll just say it that way for a minute, you're more likely going to be interviewed, which is a completely different animal.
Okay, good. Thank you.
You're welcome. I can only remember one time that I did a short presentation, and it was it was audio video with a different kind of technology. It was in a company. So they had a huge screen, and I was sitting in a room with a big camera and my computer and lots of audio video. And that was when I was invited to speak at the ICF in Kansas City. And they had the Wichita group, and the Wichita group was beamed in, so to speak, into the Kansas City group, and then I spoke to both groups. But that was, it was very difficult. Because I couldn't see, I could see the room and I could see the people. They were distorted, but I couldn't see reactions, and it was really hard. But that's the only time I can remember ever out being invited to present that wasn't live, and that was their version of live. So, interview. Any other thoughts or questions? Okay. Now we're going to talk about crafting this the speech. So let me put us back in presentation mode. So let's talk about organizing your speech. In the beginning of the speech, the first thing you want to know is to keep it simple. The first 30 seconds of your speech are the most important. In that period of time, you have to grab the attention of the audience. You have to engage their interest in what you have to say, and you have to connect with them. 30 seconds. In the first 2 minutes, you must preview your message. You have to raise a thought-provoking question or make an interesting or controversial statement or talk about a relevant quote that will be the centerpiece of your talk or ask a powerful question. Then you want to have 2 or 3 key points, no more than 3. 2 is probably pretty optimum. And you want to develop an overriding message, or what we call a unifying theme, so that the 2 or the 3 points relate to each other. They're like telling a story, it's going someplace. Because remember, you're informing, transforming, motivating, persuading, so everything that you say is about that purpose. This is going to sound really funny, but speak in headlines or sound bites. It's far less important to speak in complete sentences than it is to really focus and to speak in headlines or sound bites. And you'll probably have a PowerPoint for a presentation that's 40 to 60 minutes. And if you do have a PowerPoint, include 2 bullet points or 1 short statement per slide. I've seen PowerPoint slides, I'm sure you have too, that are filled with copy from top to bottom, side to side. And that's not the purpose of a PowerPoint slide. The PowerPoint slides punch up a bullet point or 2 or a very short statement. And it actually frames some of the content that you're delivering, because the PowerPoint slide will be up there. It could be up there for 2 or 3 or 4 minutes, because you're not moving slides one after the other in rapid succession. So that's the beginning of your speech. Let's talk about the body of your speech. You have 16 to 18 minutes for the body of your speech and 2 minutes for the closing. 16 to 18 minutes for the body of your speech and 2 minutes for the closing. If we're going to give a 30-minute speech. If we're going to give a 30-minute speech. Now, the body of your speech is where you want to make your points and give your support or your evidence for each point. And you craft, you cultivate the key ingredient of a unifying theme throughout your speech and formulate a series of 2 or 3 points that build on each other. They build on each other, and they are taking you to the overarching purpose. Why are you here? What are you trying to achieve with the speech? Again, use personal examples or stories, statistics, and quotes. It's all about delivering value, and we talked about that last week with the teleclasses. And here again, when you are delivering your short presentation or your workshops, value, value, value. It's all about giving the audience, giving your listeners value, making them feel happy or entertained, making them feel better about some job they have to do maybe, feel better about themselves. There's a very old book. I've been referring people to this book for years. It's called Words That Sell. Words That Sell. It's one of the old Bibles by Richard Bayan. B like boy, B-A-Y-A-N. Words That Sell is a famous little book that's used by marketing professionals around the world to this day. And it's a terrific resource for speakers writing short presentations. Words That Sell. There are tons of books out there, but Words That Sell tends to be that tried and true resource. Because you want to sell your ideas. You want to increase your visibility and your credibility in the marketplace. And you want to move people to action. The closing of your presentation, your 30-minute presentation, is 2 minutes. And that should be your summary and whatever calls to action you're going to make that move people into action, action statements. And remember that the last thing you say may be the most remembered. The closing of your speech is an opportunity to summarize the main points, to provide some further food for thought to your audience, and to leave your audience with positive memories of your speech. So to do that, deliver the final thought or the request or the point that you want to make, engaging them into action. Could even be emotional. You know, it could even be emotional. Make an impassioned plea. The most effective speakers use their voices, their faces, and their bodies to convey their message. You probably heard this a million times, but dress professionally. Dress in muted or dark colors. Depending on where you live and who you are and what your style is and who you're speaking with, you might wear something that is colorful or that is a big print. It depends on who you are and what your style is. But a rule of thumb for speakers is to dress very professionally with muted or dark colors. So a shirt, a suit, a skirt, ties if you're men, jackets, always wear a tie and a jacket. Speak clearly and adjust your voice so that everyone can hear you. It would be good to have a microphone, and I think that you should have a wireless lavalier mic that you bring, that's charged, that you bring with you for all presentations. So in 1 second, you can clip on your wireless lavalier mic and be prepared. Because you might be in a room and they think you won't need a mic, so they maybe didn't order it. Or it might be old and there's a lot of feedback. Or it's not long enough or not wireless. And then you're stuck. So adjust your voice. Don't shout into a mic. Take your time speaking. Pause to emphasize a point or to allow the audience to react to a fact or to an anecdotal story. That's a really important tip, is to allow your audience a time to react. If you're saying something to persuade, give them time to be persuaded. Give them time to let what you're saying sink in so they can change their mind. Or if the purpose is to transform or motivate, those all have emotional components. So you have to be sure that your delivery provides the opportunity for people to actually shift internally. Make eye contact with your audience. This helps to build trust and a relationship between you and the audience, you and the listeners. If you can, take the mic, come out from behind a lectern, if they have provided a lectern, and hold your mic, if you don't have a leveler mic, and walk back and forth in the front. You may walk a few steps into each of the aisles if there are aisles, and make sure that you're talking to people and you're looking at them. You're making eye contact with everybody as you're talking. Don't fidget or make other nervous gestures with your hands. Often I will hold a pen, so I may have a mic in one hand and a pen in the other. Just gives me something to do with my hands. And learn how to use hand gestures effectively. Most speakers will use their wrists and their hands. And there's a saying in the speaking world that it looks like a chicken. That you're just sort of being a chicken. I don't know why, but what you want to do is move from the shoulder. You have a shoulder, you have an upper arm, you have your elbow that moves, you've got your lower arm. So when you're talking, speak from your shoulder so that your whole arm moves, not just your wrist and your hand, and that you're turning your body. And when you're moving, you're not just moving your head or moving your upper body and leaving your waist straight, but really walk and use your body, turn your body. The most important thing is to be yourself and allow your own personality to come across. Be yourself. All right, now let's talk about the question and answer period. For some speakers, the question and answer portion of the talk is the best. And I'm one of those speakers. I love the Q&A. To other speakers, it's the worst thing in the world. It can be their worst nightmare. And some speakers won't even have questions and answers. They won't do it. But your audience wants to talk to you. They want to connect. They want to get, if they're listening and they were engaged in what you were saying, they want to talk to you. They want to connect with you. So listen to the entire question before you begin your answer. Make sure you answer before, make sure you understand the question before you answer it. So listen to the entire question. If you don't have a second mic on the floor that the person is speaking into, repeat the question and just say, I'm going to repeat the question to make sure everybody has heard the question before I answer it. Repeat the question and then count to three or four. Take a breath before you answer. This is going to buy you time to gather your thoughts if you need it. Always thank the person who asks the question, and whenever possible, weave the question into your main point. Or acknowledge the person for asking a great question that gives you the opportunity to offer one more brief piece of information or clarification. Now, answer the question completely, but briefly. If you don't know the answer, admit that you don't know and promise to find out, and then let them know. Ask the questioner if his or her question was answered. Did I answer your question? Does that make sense? What are your thoughts about that? So what's your reaction to what I just said? Check in with the person asking the question. And use the question to segue to the next question who else has a question? Thank you for this great question. Who else has a question? Who would like to go next? All right, use it as a segue. Let's switch horses, as I say, and talk about our initial planning. Let's talk about the speaker's checklist and what should you be talking about? What should you be thinking about? What should you know before you start? This is going to sound really basic, but you would be surprised how many people don't go through this, A, don't have a checklist, and B, don't go through their speaker's checklist. You should know the name of the organization that's sponsoring the event, and you should know the purpose of the organization. What do they do? What are they all about? Why you? Why do they want you to present? And what is the purpose of your presentation? What outcome do the sponsors hope to achieve? You should always ask for a copy of the event or the conference schedule or itinerary. If you're coming in to do a lunch or a breakfast meeting, that's one thing. But if you're a speaker at a conference or at another event where there are other speakers, you should always have the conference or event schedule. You should know when you're speaking. If it's a three-day conference, I was in St. Louis last year at the Better Marriages Conference, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And that was the first thing I asked was, after the conference schedule came out, where am I? What day am I speaking? And I was speaking on Friday before lunch, which was a great time. So there was the keynote address, which I was actually a part of. And then there was a break, and I did my book signing at the break, right in the middle of the pastries and the coffee, and then moved right into my breakout session. So sometimes you're not that lucky, but you always want to know where will you be, where will people be, what will they be doing, what's going on. So get a copy of the schedule of the itinerary. How big is the audience? What should you expect in terms of audience and size? What's the room setup? And what's the available equipment? If you can, go to the place a couple of days before and really talk to the event planning, to the chair, the people who are responsible on site, to see the equipment, test the equipment, look at the cords. Are all the cords there? Are they long enough? I did a presentation at a country club many years ago, and the AV equipment was so old, audiovisual, was so old, and the cords were short. It was going to a very old monitor, and I actually had to call somebody from my office and have them go to Best Buy and buy longer cords and a laser pointer, because I was so far away from the PowerPoints and the screen, from my computer. It was awful. And they came running to save the day 30 minutes later. Fortunately, I got there 2 hours early, so I was able to understand, you know, figure out that what was missing and call for help. So make sure that you know what the room setup is, what the available equipment is. What's the time and the length of your presentation? You should know this before you even start writing your presentation. You need the location and directions and parking information. And what are the policies and the regulations of the facility where you are going to speak? You want to know all of that. Are they paying for your lunch? Are you invited to stay for lunch? Is it breakfast? Okay. Preliminary preparation. Know your material. Practice, practice, practice. Did I say practice? And it's your material. It's not somebody else's. So you already have depth in the material, depth of knowledge. You are aware. You have experience with this topic, with these pieces of information. So practice your presentation. Tape record and listen to your speech over and over and over. Revise it where necessary. Listen for your tone and for your enthusiasm. Listen for unnecessary words or sounds. How long is it? Time your presentation. If you're not familiar with your material, or you're uncomfortable with it, or you're nervous about it, it's only going to be worse when you're in front of people. So take care of all of that well before you arrive to deliver your speech. Know what equipment you want or what will be there. Is it a tabletop lectern with a microphone, or a standing floor podium with a microphone? Does the microphone have a long enough cord? Is it possible to take it out of its holder and walk around with it? Maybe it's cordless. If it's not a cordless handheld mic, I would have, as I said, your cordless lavalier mic. $50, $60, you have a cordless lavalier mic forever. test the sound system, make sure it's okay? Are you going to have somebody video or somebody else or tape it or somebody else? I have a colleague who just presented at one of the ICF conferences, and she didn't know how she was going to record. And I said to her, have your phone sitting on the table that you're standing in front of, at the edge of the table, with your microphone out toward the audience, so it's the closest it could be to her. And just before you do your presentation, put your recorder on, and then walk around the table, welcome people, do your introduction, and don't even think about your phone again. You know, our little telephones are so great. They've got terrific cameras. They have terrific tape recorders. So take advantage of your phone. You don't need a big professional setup. She has taken that tape. This is true. She's taken that tape recorder, that tape recording from her phone, and she's made MP3s, and she's put audio clips in emails and audio clips on her website, and prepared audios for distribution for more speaking gigs. So you don't need a big setup. You don't need a videographer. If you want a videographer, that would be terrific, a professional videographer. But at a minimum, you've got your phone. Do you have whiteboards or extra paper? Do you have clean boards? Do you have flip charts and colored pens? What do you need? What do you want? What would be the best thing to get your point across? I'm going to talk more about this in workshops. Sometimes you'll decide to do this for a presentation, but you'll for sure need flip charts and whiteboards for your workshop. Your laptop computer, your projectors, overhead projectors, LCD projectors, screens, extension cords, you know, whatever it is that's there that you're going to use or that you want, that you need. Easels. Sometimes people need masking tape or tack gum or that blue painter's tape. You never know what kind of stuff that you'll need. So take a look around. Go to Home Depot or go to Walmart. Go to Office Depot and just see what kinds of things are available that you might need. Extension cords, tape, all kinds of different things. So think about what might happen and what you might need. Moving on to personal preparation. What are you going to wear? Know well in advance what you're going to wear. And if you need a scarf or a jacket or shoes, what have everything ready and prepared. Do you know how to get where you're going? Maybe take a dry run. Drive there once or twice. Pack all of your materials the day before your presentation. Literally, pack them up, sit them by the door. Your speech, any handouts, visual aids, equipment, your podium clock. You should have a podium clock. You could use your phone. Any marketing materials, any promotional materials. Have everything right there where you need it. When I went to St. Louis, I asked them how many people were going to be in the breakout session. They didn't know. They said generally about 30. So I prepared 50 sets of handouts. I had a variety of sets of handouts, but each set was 12 pages. So we printed and collated, my virtual assistant printed and collated them all. She lives in New York, and she had them. She sent them to St. Louis. And they arrived in St. Louis 2 days before I did, because I wanted to be sure they were going to get there. And I had plenty of time. And I knew that I wasn't going to speak until Friday. But I didn't want to be put in the position that I was in the office. What do they call that? The business office of the hotel, trying to do all of this. And then I called the hotel, and I asked to speak to the desk manager. And I let her know. I got her name. And I let her know who I was, when I was checking in, that I was with the conference and I was presenting, and I told her that we were sending a box of written materials and what was their policy, how are they going to handle that, to be sure that they were there when I arrived on Thursday. And so she told me what their policy was and how they handled them and where they would be, and again I had her name, and so we sent them off, and she actually told us how to add a label, a sticker, to the box. So we did that. We added a special sticker to the box that she suggested, and then called the hotel the day they were supposed to arrive, which was actually the day that I was flying. So my assistant called to make sure that they got them. Somebody had eyeballed them, and somebody knew they were there, a real person. We didn't take anything for granted, and where that person put them. And then I connected with my assistant when I arrived and went to the front desk. I didn't ask when I checked in because there was a lot going on. There were a lot of people checking in. I went back down about 45 minutes later and told them again who I was and that there was a package here. And she said, yes, you checked in so fast, we forgot to give it to you. It was right here. We had it brought up this morning. And there it was. And again, I had 50 sets of handouts for a breakout session that they believed would be about 30. 20 more was a little bit of overkill. But as it turned out, I had to give one to the chairperson and one to the person that interviewed me and put one in a basket by the door in some other room. Well, that's three. And then it turned out that there were not 20 couples, that there were 32 couples. So while you're doing the math, I had 50. There were 32 couples and then three or four or five that were in various places. So I was very happy to have extra handouts, right? Because had I just come with 30, I would have been short. Or just come with, I must have 42. Whatever the numbers were. It was a good thing that I had extra, and it wound up I didn't have that many extra. So make sure that everything is prepared and by the door or mailed and that you've taken care of it in advance. The day of the presentation, make sure that you bring everything with you, that you're familiar with the room, that you arrive early. You check out where you'll be speaking. You walk around so that you see if there are any dead areas or difficult areas to see you. Practice using the mic and any visual aids. Make any last-minute adjustments that you need to. I did a presentation, and usually this group gets 30 people at their luncheons. And I called the day before to see how many people were going to be there, and they'd already had 60 reservations, and I was stunned. And I didn't have any handouts or anything. I was just really surprised. Walked into the room an hour and a half early, and it was this giant room. And I said to the woman, the program chair was there, and she was in the back of the room setting up, and I said, this is a huge room, and I saw a lot of tables. And she said, we are still taking reservations. The phone is still ringing in the office. And she said, we have 120 paid reservations. I was talking about my experience having been stalked, and it was very well publicized. It was the first time that I'd really given this presentation. It was to a large group, but usually they didn't have that many people at their luncheons. But there were a lot of people that wanted to talk about those kinds of crimes, being stalked, being carjacked, home invasions. Although in those years, home invasions weren't, they were happening, but they weren't called home invasions. And there were people from not only the group, but from the city, who really wanted to come and to listen, and interestingly, and to talk, and to share. So you always have to think about what you're talking about, and what the promotion is, and how many people might really be there. If you are tense, then do some deep breathing. Visualize yourself giving your speech. Imagine yourself speaking. Make sure that your voice is loud and clear and assured. Think about the people in the room being your friends. It's why it's nice if you can to meet some of the people before, if you're doing a workshop or a presentation. Because if you know a couple of people or you meet people, you do a meet and greet or you're there when they come in. See, a lot of times they don't want you there. They say, oh, we're going to just present you in this big deal. No, I want to be there. I want to actually meet people. Because if I meet people and I make a connection with them, then they're my friends. I'm doing air quotes, friends. But I'm more comfortable because I'm speaking to a group of people who I have some relationship with. I build, remember this word, rapport. Not a lot, but a little bit, and a little bit of rapport goes a long way. And actually, you know, nervousness is fine. Nervousness is energy. You don't want to be too relaxed. You want to be, so use that nervousness, that anxiety, as energy. Just shift it around a little bit. But it's fine to be nervous. Sammy Davis Jr. used to say that he never came out and did any kind of performance for any group of people without being nauseous first. And for him, he believed that was a matter of respect. Look, I don't know if he was just telling himself that or what, but it sounds good. For him, that's what it was. For him, it was a matter of respect. And I took that on. I said, yep, I like that. And if I get nervous and I get anxious, then I'm going to believe, I'm going to know that for me, it's a matter of respect. There are a lot of, let me just talk about name tags. I forgot about name tags. You know, if you're going to start speaking and doing workshops and stuff, I suggest you go online and that you order a name tag, a beautiful brushed silver, brushed gold for the ladies. Maybe you want bling around it. But you have your own name tag, and that you not let somebody stick some stupid gluey thing on your beautiful clothes, and then they curl at the edges. You know what I'm talking about. I mean, that's just awful. The name badges that they have now, they have little bars and they fit on the back inside of your jacket and they're magnets and they hold the name tag in place. So spend $20 if you're going to do a presentation and get a name tag that you can wear over and over and over and over. Okay, that's my name tag tip. Fear of public speaking. You know, it's the number one fear people have about public speaking. Is the audience relating badly to them, right? Oh, they won't like me. They won't like my ideas. They won't want to stay and listen to my talk. They'll heckle me or taunt me. They'll make harsh comments. They'll ask impossible questions. So you want to develop a strategy and be prepared to ask yourself, what is wrong with them? Are they in the right room? Did they misunderstand what I was talking about? So regardless of what anyone in the audience says, just stop talking. Ask them if you've just offended them and how can you redeem yourself. Have I just offended you? I am so sorry. How may I redeem myself? Oh, I'll tell you what, people do not know what to say. And a lot of times they're actually then shamed by the audience. So you don't. The thing that you don't want to do is ignore a person that's heckling you or that's interrupting. We have that very, very, very little, very little. And most of the time people will just get up and leave or they'll just stay and suffer through it. People tend, 99.9% of the people tend to be very professional and courteous, even if they hate what you're saying. I did a lecture in a very large room, and I stopped to take questions as I do. And so a woman was sort of waving her hand around, waving, and I said, yes, thank you, what's your question? And she said, I haven't liked you for years. And I thought, oh, my God, where did I meet her? What did I say to her? I'm trying to think as she's talking. I never liked you. I haven't liked you for the longest time. And she said, and my friend made me come with her today. And she said, and I want to tell you, I love everything you're saying. Everything. She said, I'm so glad I came, and I just think you're terrific. Well, I didn't know what to say. So I said, well, I'm sorry. Did I offend you in the past? Where did we meet? And she said, no, we've never met. I just heard about you. I've just known about you. That happens more than you think. You make an impression without even knowing that you make an impression when you are a public person, when you are out there doing stuff, when you are out there and people know who you are, they form opinions before they meet you, right? It's ridiculous, but it's true. So just stay gracious, stay grounded, stay open. Just be yourself, no matter what anybody says. Always bring promotional giveaways. Always bring promotional giveaways. That will sometimes also help. Your business cards are not enough. I suggest that you use rack cards. A rack card is on an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper, you can get 3 rack cards. So they're 8.5 is divided by 3. That's how much they are across, and then they're. I'm not telling you how to do this right. Okay. So they are 11.5 divided by 3, so that the top of each card sits, so they're side by side on the 8.5 by 11 piece of paper. And they're all 8.5 inches long and 11.5 divided by 3 inches across. Rack cards and heavy cardstock. With, what would you imagine I'm going to say? Benefit statements. What is the benefit of working with you? Benefit statements. So you want your name and your picture and your contact information and some benefits. What's in it for them if they work with you? Rack cards, front and back. You don't have to use the back, but the back is a wonderful opportunity to maybe you have a quote on the back of your, I've always had quotes on the backs of my cards, either the jackets of my books or quotes. My current business cards, the back has my logo, my heart, and it says, ask me how I guide couples facing illness through the unknown and unimaginable and not just stay in fear. Because that's what I do. I work with couples in trouble. So, and I change the quote every once in a while. Depends on how many business cards I hand out. So you can have just a quote in some beautiful script. They're very inexpensive. And it used to be for years, I did rack cards through Vistaprint, and there was an invitation that worked fine for a rack card, and I just designed it. And it was a little tricky, but it worked fine. Vistaprint is a great resource. Well, a couple of years ago, Vistaprint started offering rack cards. So you can actually design a rack card on Vistaprint and not have to sort of massage one of the invitation cards for your rack cards. Okay. There's a famous speaking axiom. Have a powerful, captivating opening and a strong, memorable close. And put the two of them as close together as possible. So that's the presentation on public speaking. Although, let me just talk for a minute about what we can talk about. You can talk about current events. Read newspapers, magazines, news shows, cable shows, Twitter, right? Twitter, open your phone. What's trending on Twitter? And there you go. Make a list of themes and topics that interest you. Make your topics, don't talk about coaching, whatever you do. Even if somebody wants you to talk about coaching, it's so boring to talk about coaching. Talk about something that people care about. The importance of setting goals, or if you're talking to companies that don't succeed, people do. Taking responsibility for your actions. Turning job interviews into job offers. Finding inspiration in the world around you. Right, generic, but wonderful topics that you can inspire, inform, persuade, transform. If you're asked specifically to give something detailed about your intellectual property, okay, you can teach something. Be very, very careful about that, because in 20 minutes it's hard and people get bored very, very quickly. When you go for your presentation, I talked a minute, or in the intro, I talked about intros, bios, and extras, so let me spend a minute and tell you that you should have your own introduction. Email it to the program chair, from the sponsor who asked you to come. Have it printed on a 4x5 card and hand it to the person. So you're emailing it. And you're handing it to them. This is the way you would like to be introduced. Now, they may do their own research. They may introduce you the way they want to introduce you. But bring this intro card. I just thought, in case this would be of any value to you, I would give you an easy way to introduce me. Hand them the card. Across the top, it says intro. give it to the meeting planner. Someone from the group will introduce you. Maybe it'll be the meeting planner, maybe it'll be the president or some other person. You want to be in control of that introduction if at all possible. Take an intro card. And then you want to give them the extro card. That's how what you want them to say about you at the end of your presentation. Okay? And then so you've got your intro, you've got your extro, and then you can give them a short bio. And again, you want to email these three things a couple of days before, the morning of, and you want to bring them on 3x5 cards the morning of. Okay. Here was a conference in which I was showcased during the keynote the first morning. And I sent the president of the organization and the managing director an email a couple of days before, and I said, in case this would be of any help to you, here's my intro, here's how I'd like to be introduced, here's the most important things about my bio that I would like the audience to know. There were hundreds of people there. I could have let her go to my website and figure out what she wanted to say. I wanted people in the audience to know certain things about me. They thanked me for doing that all weekend and said they think that they were going to make it a requirement for everybody to do it for them from now on. It was so, why? Easy for them. So my making it easy for them resulted in my being introduced in exactly the way I wanted to be introduced. They thought I did it for them. It can be mutual. It can be win-win. Win-win-win. You win, I win, we win. Everybody wins. All right, I'm going to take us out of presentation mode. And put us into question and answer mode in case you have any questions. Okay. Anybody have any thoughts, questions, or feedback?
Jackie, I have a question about the extro. So what kinds of things should be in an extro?
For example, at the conference, in the extro, they thank you, Dr. Jackie. We're so happy to have Dr. Jackie with us. She will be right outside during the break at her book signing, and her presentation is in this room, which is located over there, and the presentation is this. If you haven't registered for it or you'd like to be at her presentation, that's what she's presenting, and that's where and when she's presenting what she's presenting. That was really important to me, and that's why I had, 30 was the number I misspoke earlier. They told me there would be 30 people, and there were 40, and there were 42. And that's what happened, because I wanted them to let people know once they were there what I was talking about, which was when your partner is ill, the couple's journey. It's not something that is widely talked about in the world. And so I wanted everybody at the conference to know before they miss it, to, you know how people say, oh, I wish I'd known you were talking about that, I would have come. And I asked them if they were willing for people to duck out of the thing that they had enrolled in and come to my presentation. They said, sure, absolutely. They were very willing to have people do that. Now, if I was at a breakfast meeting, I might want to have them remind people where my office was or how to contact me or remind them about the promotional material sitting at the desk with my contact information or that I was willing to stay a little bit later and answer any questions if people wanted to connect with me personally. So you have your reason. So whatever it is that you want to have happen or that you want a result to be, that's what's in your extra. Does that make sense?
Definitely. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome. Any other thoughts, questions, or feedback? Okay, so has this been helpful?
Yes.
Yes, thank you.
Yes, okay. Okay, good. Let's talk about workshops. That's the other part, and we are right on time, actually. So let me put us back in presentation mode. want to talk about the one-day basic workshop. You can have a basic workshop that's a half day, that's 2 days or 3 days. And you will just adjust the format that I'm going to give you for half a day or for a day and a half or for 2 days or 3 days. A good workshop design, again, it provides your participants the opportunity to undertake tasks for a specific outcome. This is really important because we don't do this in teleclasses and we don't do this in presentations. Now, I did do it in the breakout session in St. Louis because a breakout session is a little like a short workshop, 90 minutes. So you can have people break up into small groups, which I did, in a 90-minute presentation. You have to be very concrete about it and very concise about it. But I did want people, couples, to have an opportunity to work with each other for just a few minutes a couple of times to get a feel for what I was talking about and what I was suggesting that they do. And that is what a breakout session is, and that is what a workshop is that people have an opportunity to interact with each other and for sure with you. A must for breakout sessions at conferences and events and workshops is question and answer. It's an absolute essential must. People are undertaking tasks for a specific purpose. They're going to change something that they're doing, a belief, an attitude. They're going to implement plans for action and achieve some outcome. A workshop is going to shift and change the way they work or think or behave in a way that is measurable and sustainable. Two important words. Traditional workshop design is a simple four-step process. Workshop design, I'm talking about design, not delivery. You prepare your workshop, you establish rapport with the participants, you deliver your material, you summarize, concretize, and personalize. Remember those words from last week from the teleclass. Summarize, concretize, personalize. If you don't do this, they might as well have not spent the time with you. You want to make usable that which you've just given them. So workshops are powerful face-to-face learning environments that are conducted from an outcome-based learning approach. They're learning environments, outcome-based learning approach. I'm talking about the day-long workshop, but you can have, as I said, half-day, day-and-a-half, two-day, three-day. In the day-long workshop, talking about design, you can have up to three learning outcomes. So participants should be able to do something concrete and valuable to them at the end of the workshop. You must be clear what these outcomes mean, and you must be able to explain and discuss what the outcomes mean. Know the benefits that are associated with each learning outcome so that you can write your marketing copy, have intelligent pre-qualifying and qualifying conversations with enrollees. You can develop your workshop outline. And you can find related articles and other workshop materials suitable for handouts. There are three simple elements to include in every workshop that will keep your participants on the edge of their seats. And you already know what these are. Anecdotal personal stories that bring your point alive, statistics to validate your teaching points, and quotes that are compelling or quotes from famous people that you use to strengthen your teaching points, as well as stuff that you say. There are four types of workshop designs: conceptual, skills, design, and problem solving. The skill workshop, you're probably not going to do a conceptual workshop, which is about understanding a concept and analyzing case studies. That's really all I'm going to say about that. The skills workshop, you identify a skill that isn't working or is lacking, and they learn a new skill or a new skill set. And then they focus on using the skill set in demos. And then you provide numerous cycles of practice, lots of feedback, and feedback from other workshop participants. Then they're going to apply the skill in their own circumstance. So you're probably going to be doing a lot of skills workshop. Another kind of workshop is the design workshop, redesigning learning materials, assessments, and courses. Not going to probably be doing that, so I'm not going to spend any time talking about design workshop. But I just theoretically want to give you the overarching theme. The other one is the problem-solving workshop. Most coaches are really going to develop the skills workshop or the problem-solving workshop. What are the problems identified by the participants? What are the solutions that they can explore that might work for them? And then they solve the problems. They recognize and understand the problem in advance. They use the workshop to demonstrate the methods of resolution. You have models of problem-solving processes, parenting workshops, dating workshops. There are a lot of kinds of workshops working with ADD adults, ADD adults around money. There's a lot of coaching done around ADD. So those kinds of workshops are designed as problem-solving workshops. The first thing you want to say to yourself is, who is attending my workshop and why? Like anything else, who is attending my workshop and why? Who's the target audience? Why are they here? What do they need or want from the workshop? What attracted them to the workshop? Was it what you were talking about? Was it you? What new skill, knowledge, or behavior was needed? What did they need to be able to do as a result of the workshop? This is a very important one. What is the average participant's attitude, knowledge, and existing skill in this area? You have to know that. Are you starting from the beginning? At the end of the workshop, what will they want to be able to do better, different, or more immediately and successfully? That's that measurable and sustainable piece. Better, different, and more immediately and successfully. Learning outcomes are the backbone of your workshop. They have to be clearly stated. They have to be specific, concise. They have to be expressed in writing and when spoken. So they're going to sound a little different in your written materials than when you actually speak to people about the learning outcomes. And again, hear those two words, measurable and sustainable. Workshops get tricky because you need a venue. They also, in this day and age, are expensive. So you have to make sure that you do the math and that you charge enough. The venues have to show that you recognize the needs of those attending and you're willing to add special touches. So the site has to be conveniently located in an area that's perceived as safe and upscale. This is really the truth. So airport hotels really think about it. Unless you've got people coming from 6 or 8 countries and they're just coming in and they're leaving, that could be one of the only reasons you would consider an airport hotel. They're tired. Now, there are exceptions. The Hyatt Hotel in Chicago at O'Hare Airport is quite an amazing hotel. So if you've got a hotel like that, you can have a venue at a hotel like the Hyatt at O'Hare all day long, but you really have to know your hotels and be careful. They need easily affordable on-site parking, easy and affordable on-site parking, affordable on-site lunch. You must set a minimum and a maximum number of participants to ensure that the workshop is effective. You have to ensure that the room is big enough to allow participants to move around for subgroup work. You have to make sure that they don't set the tables up as, you know, those long, skinny tables. And then you've got 25 people sitting at a long, skinny table. Don't ever do a workshop. You know, that would be a lecture. That would be a seminar setup. Not a classroom setup. Don't do it otherwise. Because you've got to have people at round tables or in a horseshoe, or a circle. I like rounds, rooms with round tables, and then you put people on the half round, meaning that the bottom round where people would have their backs to you if you were at the front of the room, you don't seat people at the back side or the downside of the round, only at the top of the round. It's a great way to do a workshop, because then what people can do is they can drag their chairs to the bottom side of the round table. So you've got a couple of people at the top, a couple of people at the bottom, or they switch tables. But you've got that whole half round in all your tables, that so people don't have to go to the outskirts of the room, to the, you know, to the far walls. Some people might want to do that, but it really takes them out of group energy, and you want to be aware of doing that. And you, so a horseshoe is always good. A horseshoe, if you don't want to spend the money on a bigger or a big enough room for a bunch of tables you're only going to put seat half the people at, horseshoes work perfectly. You want to have name badges. So you have, so people have badges. Not little where the name is so little you can't see it where you are. The name badges are for you. So they have to be big enough, typed in a big enough, bright enough color so you can read the name badge from most where you are. And then if you see people at the top of the round, for example, you want to have signs that sit in front of them so that when they're sitting down at the table, you can easily see what their names are because their name table card sits in front of them or stands in front of them. I like the tablecloths clothed. Clothed. Okay, there's the word. And in, they can be white if you want to be formal. Sometimes you might want colors. I wouldn't suggest doing black. But you might want to go with blues. Blue is really about, is a color that's associated with the throat chakra. And blue facilitates talking. And it's very calming. So blues or blue and white, powder blue, is usually good. Red tends to not be so good as a color for a workshop. But you could do a pretty purple. You want to sort of stay away from orange. Greens are hard for most people, don't look good in green. So greens, even though the world, right, the background for the world is green, green grass, green trees, green shrubs, greens can be a little bit difficult. Maybe you want green napkins on white tablecloths or a crude tablecloth just for a touch of color. But you can think about color. Make sure that they, what color is your logo? What color are your materials? But your handouts, your rack cards. So make sure that this is thoughtful and that it's all pulled together. Make sure that your paperwork's in order and well organized. Have extra copies of everything. Lecture notes, handouts, activity sheets, planning guides, packets that are clipped together. Plastic things that you put things in. Sometimes you give people plastic envelopes. Pens, pads of paper, your PowerPoint slides. And I forgot to mention this when I was talking about presentations. Always have an extra thumbnail that you've got your PowerPoint slide on. So you've got it in your computer. So have it on a drive. Have it on a small portable drive. Throw three or four drives in your purse or in your briefcase or in your pocket. You never know what will happen to the material on a drive. So you can never have enough drives with your presentation on it or with your handouts on it. Before the workshop, you want to connect with your workshop participants through conversations or emails. Probably conversations, because you're going to be doing them live, and you'll have your pre-qualifying, and your enrolling conversations when you're marketing. Always show interest in your participants' needs and their concerns. What do they need? Why are they coming? What do they want? Why are they attending the workshop? You're building a relationship of trust, and you're understanding what they want, and they understand that you understand. You're allowing people to become comfortable with you, and you're beginning to build loyalty. During the workshop, your role as facilitator influences how people perceive you. Invite participants to tell you what they want from the workshop. Build a list of desired outcomes together. That should be what you're doing in the beginning, and you should do that on flip charts. I always have, if I'm doing a workshop, four easels. A minimum of four easels and four flip charts. And I have a full set of colored pens on each easel. So I'm not running back and forth getting pens, because I'm running back and forth enough, I assure you. build a list of desired outcomes together. Acknowledge people for taking their time to be with you. Recognize the value to them being in the workshop with you. But this sounds similar, doesn't it, to the teleclass that we were talking about. Inviting them to share their points of view. Sharing personal stories. Validating their participants by referencing something. So you've got your, let me stop there, and then we'll talk about the timing. Now we're going to talk about delivery. So that's the design, and that's your mindset. Now let's talk about delivery. For a day-long workshop, I'm going to have a meet and greet at 7:30 in the morning for 1 hour, and I'm going to be there. 7:30 to 8:30, meet and greet, coffee, tea, breakfast muffins. It is a little bit expensive, but it's well worth it because you have an opportunity to interact at the meet and greet with every participant. You get a sense of them. They feel connected to you. You're building rapport, and you're helping people to feel comfortable because when they get into the workshop, they're going to be working. That means they're going to be talking and sharing stories and participating. So you want to make it as easy as possible for them to do that. Meet and greet, 7:30 to 8:30. All the participants have been pre-registered. I never do registration at 7:30 in the morning, never. They've gotten all of their packages and their materials and everything via email. They print it just like your airplane, right? It comes the night before, you go online, you print it out, you're done. You get to the airport and you go through security and you've got your boarding pass. This is the same thing. They have their registration. Now, maybe they're picking up their packets. Maybe they're picking up their packets and their name tags. But that can be done either during the meet and greet or as they come into the room, the back of the room. But they're not registering, and they're not paying. Now, there is something to be said for walk-ins, and walk-ins, you can triple the price or do something obnoxious. There are people that do that. I don't do that. It disrupts the flow. It disrupts the quality of what I can deliver. So I don't do that. But I know people who do that, and for them, they're there, and it's about money. And so walk-ins, they encourage walk-ins, and it's really an obnoxious amount of money. So meet and greet, 1 hour. You begin your workshop on time, formal training, 8:30, on time. At 8:30, you start talking. You're at the front of the room, you start talking. Done. And if people come in, they come in late. You don't repeat yourself. And they'll only do that twice, and for the rest of the day after breaks, people will be there on time. You have to train people. So you welcome people, you introduce yourself and your content. You set expectations for the workshop. You deliver an icebreaker. I'll talk about that in a minute. Then you build a list of desired outcomes, and you deliver learning outcome number one lecture. You have an exercise that you do with them. You debrief it, and you summarize. And that is 2.5 hours, 8:30 to 10 o'clock. 2.5 hours. Nope, that's 90 minutes. 8:30 to 10 o'clock is 90 minutes. 90 minutes plus the meet and greet is 2.5 hours elapsed time. I confused myself. Elapsed time. 8:30 to 10 o'clock, formal training, 90 minutes. I was thinking you would never keep a group of people in a room talking to them for 2.5 hours. Okay. So let's unwrap what I did. You welcome people to the workshop. You tell them who you are. You say a few words about who you are, what your credentials are, why it is you're facilitating the workshop. Introduce your content briefly. Make your personal commitment. Remember my version of a guarantee, the three values, my values and the three takeaways. And then you mark out your expectations first. These are your expectations around cell phones, lunch, and breaks. Now, the thing I say about cell phones, I take my cell phone out, and I say, see this? Everybody has one. Take them out. I want to see them. Everybody takes their cell phone out. You see the little button on the left-hand side of the phone or the top, wherever your button is, push it and turn it off. Turn off your phone. No, not silent. No, not vibrating. Off. If you need to have your cell phone on for any reason, and I go over this with people in my pre-qualifying and qualifying conversation and in the written registration, if you need to have your cell phone on, if you're that important or what you're doing in your life is that important, I have a check, and I hold up my big checkbook. I have a giant checkbook. I have a check here for you, and I'm going to refund your tuition immediately and invite you to leave. Because I want you to be present and to be really able to get everything you can out. And if you are preoccupied or you may have to be somewhere else, I would prefer that you just go there. Now, that's my rule. And I actually would write somebody a check and have them walk out the door in that minute. I won't have cell phones on and ringing and vibrating. People checking their checks and I won't have it. Now, that's just me. But this is to say, you can run these things just like you can run your business, your coaching business, any way you want. Some people don't care. It's fine with them. If it's fine with you, don't make an issue. If it's not fine with you, then you decide what kind of environment you're creating. I was at the opera a couple of weeks ago, at the opera, and people were checking their messages many rows away. Do you know how bright those LEDs are? I couldn't believe it. And I was super annoyed. But anyway, I digress. These are learning environments. You get to create them whatever way you want. But I'm going to tell you something. I was annoyed at the opera, and I spent a lot of money to be there. You don't want people annoyed, and nobody cared that I was annoyed. I mean, nobody cared. You don't want your workshop participants annoyed. If they're thinking or they're deep in thought or concentration or they're sharing a poignant story and somebody pulls out their phone or it rings or it, well, whatever. So you're in charge of the learning environment, and I just want you to think about how you want to create your learning environment. Enough said. Then I talk about the value that I deliver. The parking discount I got for them, the lunch discount I got from them. I have another rule. Nobody eats alone. If you made friends, air quotes, with some of the people in the workshop and you see somebody in the workshop that's standing in line alone or that's going to be eating alone, invite them to sit with you. Nobody eats alone. It's a workshop rule. And if anybody eats alone, if I see that there are people around a person who's eating alone, everybody gets fined. And you will write a check to your favorite charity and give it to me, and I will mail it. Okay, lunch, discounts, try to get discounts from the hotel, and then you give vouchers and try to have stamps at the back of the room table so that you're stamping parking and stuff. Beverage and snacks, I do coffee and tea in the morning. No, we have the muffin thing at 7:30. So I always have water. In the morning, in the afternoon, I have water and iced tea and cookies and fruit. Okay? I'm a cookie person. I like cookies. But I do nuts and fruit for people who don't want the sugar and, you know, all that. It's very nice to do that. Again, it's a little more expensive, but you've got people in a room all day. And in my view, lunch isn't really enough. Okay. No food in the room. I don't have any food in the room except the food I provide. No alcohol at lunch. Now, it's depending where we are. If I'm in a hotel setting and it's not my conference, I don't say anything about wine and stuff. When I do things at resorts, then I don't ever say anything about alcohol at lunch or at dinner. If we're working in the evening, I let people police that themselves. But again, it depends on where are you and what are you doing. I work in South Africa, and I'm often there for 40 days a year, and I work at a very, very five-star resort. And the lunches are magnificent, and we have tea and stuff in the afternoons, and there is always wine at lunch and always wine at dinner. and we work into the evening. But, you know, I never, ever have said anything, and I've never had anybody impaired and not able to work. So, again, decide who you are, what is the environment, what's the learning environment, and you make those decisions. But just think about these things. Lock the room after lunch and pay to have that room cleaned. I have people come in, they change the tablecloth if they're dirty, they vacuum. So when people walk into my conference rooms after lunch, it looks like it does at 8:30 in the morning. So make sure that people take their stuff out because you're going to have the room cleaned. And give people permission to get up and move around. Right? Don't worry about getting up. If you need to get up and you need to leave, or go to the restroom, which is down the hall and to the left, or you want to get water, feel free to get up and move around. Do it as quietly as possible so you're not interrupting people. But I can talk through that. It's not a problem. Give people permission. The more permission you give people to get up and move around, the less they'll do it. And then you tell them how and when you want them to ask you a question, stop and ask me a question, interrupt me, and when and how to stop talking and come back together in the greater group when they move into their subgroups. An icebreaker is a fun, creative activity that fosters collaboration among work participants. I hate icebreakers. I cringe when people say they're going to be doing icebreakers. But they really, really are valuable. You can look it up on the internet. There are books about icebreakers. There are websites devoted to icebreakers. So they're easy to find and to figure out and to practice using, icebreakers. Because you're asking people to break into small subgroups and start making self-disclosures, sharing, working with other people. It's a workshop. That's what they came to do. So you want to make that as easy as possible for people. Building a list of desired outcomes is a way to invite participants to introduce themselves. And as part of their introduction, you're asking them to describe one learning outcome they want to achieve by the end of the day in less than 4 words. And then you write that down on the whiteboard or the flip chart. And it doesn't get erased. If you're doing that on a whiteboard, it never gets erased, not for the entire, because you're going to refer back to it at the end. So in a flip chart, you can always bring the paper back. But if you're going to have a whiteboard, make sure you have enough whiteboards. Then you work in small groups. You always set a time limit for the group. You let them know what the time limit is. You tell them when the time starts. You tell them in the middle what time it is, and then you give clear direction at the end. Generally working with pairs or threes. Pairs are great for quick reactions or practicalities for role playing. They're not good for more complex tasks. Threes, triads. Triads are great for keeping the conversation on track, moving forward to conclusions. You can have an A, B, and a C, and they can rotate. So triads are terrific. Fours are good where the task is bigger or more analytical, or where contributions of more ideas is helpful to the task, or where an observer would be helpful. So three people work and one person observes. Groups larger than four are not recommended for workshops. It's way too easy for a group member to get lost or to disengage. It bogs down the energy or the focus of the group. It's like it slows the progress. Just don't do it. It's not a good idea. Now, the debrief, they all come back into the greater group. They don't have to put their chairs back necessarily exactly where they were, but they have to come back. They can't stay in my groups on the side of the wall. They can't just change their chair if they're sitting in the sort of the back aisles, the back room or the side walls. I want them back into the group because group energy is really important. So they all come back together into what I call the greater group to explore what's been identified and learned and what specifically needs to be framed and celebrated. And then you allocate time for each group to share its findings or learnings. With the greater group, usually there's a spokesperson. And then you knit together the rich learning with your specific learning outcomes. And you summarize as you go at the end of each learning outcome. And then you personalize the learning outcome, right? Remember that? So a good workshop design provides the opportunity for participants to undertake tasks for specific outcomes, change a practice, a belief, an attitude, or a behavior, implement plans for action, and achieve an outcome. You conclude your workshop at 5 o'clock. So 4:30 to 5 is your summary, review, and activity, and it's 30 minutes. Summarize and concretize the most important aspects that have been discussed related to the three learning outcomes in detail. And then you set up a review activity, which is really important. And the review activity is where you debrief what the learning outcome was, and then they will tell you what the learning outcome was for them, the participants, and what their plans are to implement the learning outcomes, and how they're going to make the learning outcomes useful, meaningful, and operational in their lives. Remember that? Personally useful, meaningful, operational. And then you pose the personalizing powerful questions. How will you use this new concept, skill, design, or problem-solving learning? How is this going to be useful to you today? How will you tweak or customize this and apply it to your own situation today? How are you going to take this and make it fit for your situation? This is an essential integrative piece, and we talked about this for the teleclasses. Workshops are exactly the same thing. This gives people a sense. It gives you a sense of what people are valuing, and it gives them the essential piece of what they got, what they're taking away. 5 to 5:25 is feedback and evaluation. It's 25 minutes. And the way that you do this is you hand out evaluation forms after the last break, and they don't get their certificate. You always give certificates, always. It doesn't matter what your workshop is about. They get a certificate of completion at the end, and they don't get their certificate, and everybody wants them, trust me, without giving you back their evaluation. And you want to ask how well the workshop went, how successful were they at achieving the learning outcome, what should you do differently next time. There's a question that says, is there a workshop that you would like a specific topic that you would like me to develop? And then have an inbox for the evaluation sitting next to the inbox with your certificate so that you're not shuffling paper with your hands. And then I close with a 5-minute closing metaphor story. I am a student of metaphors and did a lot of metaphor trainings many years ago. Metaphors are very powerful, metaphor stories, and I always close I actually do this with presentations also, but every workshop and teleclass with a metaphor story. And then you stop, and people will typically not know it's the end because you haven't said thank you and goodbye and, you know, done all the traditional things, but you're not delivering a traditional workshop. You're really helping people to integrate and to stay present with where they are, what they've learned, how they've changed in the 10 hours that they've been with you. 10 hours elapsed time, 7:30 a.m., 5:30. After the workshop, make notes of your impression of the session. Make a list of the problems that you experienced. Have your team, if you have a team, talk to you and give you their impressions. Provide feedback to your on-site team if you have one, to the hotel, to their team, or to your point person. Send a follow-up email to all your participants with your coaching challenge the next day or 2 days later. And include a reminder of all the ways that you're available to provide ongoing support to them. You absolutely can become a masterful workshop facilitator. Appreciate that everything will not be perfect. Usually, I used to say the first time you facilitate, everything's not going to be perfect every time. It's okay. It's the experience. It's not the perfection. Perfection doesn't necessarily have an experience related to it. Understand that facilitation is a skill set and that you're going to be developing your own style and your own approaches. And understand that you will get better and better and better and better and become the facilitator that you always wanted to be. Let me just take a minute before I open for questions, because we have a few minutes, and let me talk about the half-day workshop. The half-day workshop is 4 hours, 7:30 to 8, meet and greet, half hour, 7:30 to 8. 8 to 9:30, formal training begins, same 90 minutes. You do the exact same thing. Welcome, introduction of yourself, of the content, setting your expectations, icebreaker, building the list, learning outcome number one, exercise debrief summary. First 90 minutes, the same. Then you do a 15-minute break. You come back. You do the summary and the review, which is an hour and a half. You do your feedback and evaluations for 10 minutes. You do your closing metaphor story for 5 minutes. So in the half day, you have one learning outcome. You do the didactic, you do your lecture, you do your group exercise, you come back to the greater group debrief, you summarize, you take a break. One learning outcome. It is a lot of work, and it is often true, unless a company or a corporation has asked you specifically to come to do a half-day workshop, and then you have a half-day workshop, you have a training rate. I have a day rate. And I tell them about my day rate, and my half-day rate isn't too less than my day rate. But if you're doing this yourself, it's very expensive because your on-site stuff is exactly the same. Your prep is the same. And you can't charge a lot of money for a half-day. I mean, I'm saying you can't. Let me say it another way. It's hard to get the amount of money you deserve to deliver a half-day workshop. So you can do it. I'm just giving you the upside and the downside from my experience. The two-day workshop, 7:30 to 9:30 meet and greet, same 60 minutes, 8:30 to 10 o'clock formal training, still same 90 minutes, same 15-minute break. Your formal training and your lunch, formal training, break, formal training, set up for the next day, is very different in the two-day. You end at 5 o'clock. And then day two, you start at 9 with just the formal training. 9 to 10:30, have a break, formal training, lunch, formal training, summary, exercise, feedback, evaluation, closing, metaphor, ending at 4 o'clock. So your two-day starts at 7:30 one morning, ends at 4:30, starts at 9 the next morning, goes to 4 o'clock. 2 days. And make sure you charge enough money for a two-day workshop. I know you're going to ask me how much is enough. You have to figure that out based on who your market is and where your venue is and, you know, what you're talking about. But it's really, really important that the venue and all the amenities are terrific. And for a workshop, look, you know, for a two-day workshop, you might get $1,500. It depends on what you're talking about and how much do people want to hear what you're talking about. I wouldn't do a two-day workshop for less than $800-ish, $700-ish, $795. I wouldn't. Particularly after you do some legwork and you talk to hotels about the fee, because you won't make any money. I know that at CTA, our Certified Coach Program training material talks about workshops as marketing efforts. In 2016, it is just telling you what it's like in the real world. In 2016, it's very difficult to make that work because your conversion from workshop participant, free workshop participant, marketing effort, to fee conversion is very low. So you want to deliver workshops where the thing that you're delivering is so valuable to people, they will pay. And they are in your niche. Not necessarily clients, but they're in your niche. Or people who are interested in what you have to say. Okay, I'm going to take us out of presentation mode. Okay, any thoughts, questions, or feedback before we end for today? questions, thoughts, questions, feedback going once, going twice.
Great.
I want to thank you. Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. I want to thank you.
Very helpful.
Oh, I'm so glad. Thank you so much. I want to thank you for being here with me for this series. It's a great series. I hope that you do teleclasses, short presentations, and lots of workshops. It's a wonderful way to connect with people and to showcase what you know. So my pleasure to be here with you, and I hope to see you very soon in another CPA grad school offering. Take very good care. If you have any problems with the links to the handouts for today's series, today's session or last week's session, or the recordings, Dr. Jackie at drjackieblack.com, and I'll make sure you get whatever you need. Thanks again, and bye for now.
Thank you.